Warning, the podcast you are about to listen to may have adult language and discuss adult themes not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.
Bench warmers, welcome. This is one of those times where I am grateful that we have the intro music that we do, because it always does make me feel a little bit better when I get to hear the sultry sounds of Warren singing us onto the show. But also, I mean, it's a good lesson that I've learned in the classroom. You got to be, whether it's a good day, whether it's a bad day, you got to try and be the same, because no matter what you are going through, there's a possibility one of the kids in your room is probably going through something as well. So welcome in. We got to talk about it. It's currently not over, technically. But if you've watched game 4 tonight of the Dallas Stars and Colorado Avalanche series, you know that this thing has basically been over since about 10 minutes left in the third period.
No. It's been over since the warm-up started, since the national anthem started, Jimmy.
No, it's been over since an hour and a half before the game when you realized
it was less than an hour and a half. It was
Probably figured out Taves is sick before, so they figure out Taves can't go. So you got to insert Caleb Jones, which we will talk about. Nico and I had it wasn't even a long conversation. It was the conversation and it just repeated itself. I texted him and then he just replied and said, yep, still. Before we get into all of that, we haven't even said it yet. Far End of the Bench podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. Live on the YouTube channel.
Don't worry, listeners. We do have a positive part of this show.
Yes, so you got to stick through.
It's going to suck for the first half, but don't worry. We have some good news and good things going on. It's going to suck, like I said. Got some shitty things to talk about, but we have a lot of fun things, too, to talk about. So don't worry. We'll get both for you guys.
Be sure to follow us on all social medias at FEOTV Pod. That's Instagram, X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Also follow us on TikTok, because those videos are starting to be dropped a little bit more often. We're starting to release some more shorts. Be sure to check out the content. Follow, tell friends to follow, because we're trying to do as much as we can for everybody and give it to you as pause. Just not even going to say we're trying to give you as much different content as we possibly can, so that it's not always the same thing moving forward. All right, do we want to start with the stuff that was before the game, or do we want to save that for the?
Let's start before, because obviously that played a factor of how poor this performance was, because it was such a demoralizing thing for not just the team, but the fan base. And you could see on every single fan that showed up there, it was like the fucking wind was knocked out of them before the national anthems even played. Like I said, I took a nap between dinner and between the Avs game started. I woke up about 15 minutes before the Avs game started, and I was like, what the fuck just happened? I was like, I'm sorry, hold on. What? Like, I'll let you go ahead, but man, this game was over before it started.
It's one of those rare moments that was caught on tape now that we were starting to do all the live shows. And the Variety Sports Network, which we forgot to mention, but I was just on the Five Hole show for the hockey before the game started, and we were talking about this series. They were the ones who broke that news to me. I did not know before the show went live. They decided it dropped like right as the show was going on air. So they wanted to do the rest of the interview, and then that was the end of the interview. And you just it's frustrating. And I've seen a couple of different people that I think have put it very eloquently, and I tried to be as fair as possible, because it's not frustrating that he has these issues. I don't want anybody to get it twisted. When we're talking about Valeri Nichushkin, I am not trying to put him down for the things that he's going through, because if you've been around somebody that has an addiction, if you've gone through training to like deal with that, so if you've had those prevention trainings, if you've worked in certain fields where you have to worry about that, you know that it is not his choice to do what he has been doing. It is not a deliberate choice. And I probably, I wasn't saying that this is how the Avalanche players should feel, but I brought it up on the Five Hole show. If you're sitting in that dressing room, yes, you know what Val goes through and what he's had to go through. And he was in player assistance. This is now his third strike into the player assistance program. So not only is he suspended for 6+ months, he has to reapply for status to get back into the league. It's the fact that all of those other guys in the dressing room now, two seasons in a row, two postseasons in a row, have relied on you. You've been there for the start, and then all of a sudden you're not there anymore. And this team, like all the mental, forget what they did on the ice, because I feel like the mental side does go into it, like you were saying. That was a piss poor effort from everybody all the way up and down the lineup. They showed a highlight of McKinnon.
I'm not going to say all the way down the lineup because Georgia kept.
Included in that. I'm talking about the highlight of Nathan McKinnon getting stripped in the Dallas offensive zone and the puck being scored at the other end on that shorthanded goal.
Yeah.
Are you joking? I'm not going to say what I'm going to say because there's already enough people saying it, but you want to win that trophy that everybody wants you to win at the end of the season. That ain't the effort that's going to get that trophy in your goddamn case. Like, we got to fix that. I get Val was a huge part of this team. I get it sucks losing a top six forward and a top pair defenseman all within 90 minutes of a hockey game. You are paid handsomely to be able to overcome these things. You are supposed to be talented enough to be able to score. Yes, Taves out sucks. Val, not necessarily a part of your big three, even though he's been playing and producing at that level. In reality, you're taking away a goal and a half because that's when what Val's been producing in the playoffs. A goal and a half, a point and a half, 2 points, whatever you want to say. So that's not good. But that does not mean that everybody else forgets how to score.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, I probably can touch on this attrition scenario the best because obviously I've met the individual, I've met his family, and my dad's obviously done some business for him in the past. It's just a very, very shitty situation, right? It's two straight years. That's the worst part about this. This is two straight years of the Cale Makar, Nathan McKinnon era. If we look back on this era and we only win one championship in this era, unfortunately, it's going to be one of the biggest wastes in NHL history. Because you have arguably the best defenseman ever at the end of his career. You have one of the most high-powered offensive units in Nathan McKinnon in the prime of their careers, and you only get one cup out of it, which is going to be disappointing. But back on Val, like I said, it's important for him to get help. That's very, very apparent at this point. It is no longer – the game of hockey is done. It's going to be weird saying this, but I would not be surprised if we've seen Valeri Nichushkin play for the last time in the NHL. I'm dead serious. And that's a very, very strong statement. I'm well aware of what I just said. Because like I said, I'm a Val fan. I love the way he plays. I love the individual, how kind he was to me, and the way he plays on the ice. It's undeniable. He is one of the best hockey players in the world. It's undeniable. He's a first line player for a lot of teams. But when you have as many off the ice problems going on in your life, it's hockey needs to come second.
That's the denominator.
Hockey needs to come second. That's just plain simple. Hockey needs to come second. And like I said, it's the good or bad thing about this is with Val more than likely not coming back, there is other opportunities, right? You probably could bring Casey Middlestat back now for a better price. You can get Drouin back because he's on a 1 year deal. You can add more of these pieces back, and obviously with Landy back, you'll hope that he can fill in that role. But like I said, two of your top six guys in your cup run not playing the next 2 years in the playoffs. I mean, I don't know many teams that can go through that and win a championship. Plain and simple. And look, obviously both are for different reasons, and Landy hasn't been able to skate since he lifted the cup on the ice, and Val's had all the off-the-ice problems. But like I said, you're in the middle of the prime of two of the best players in the world's career. You're in the middle of it. And like I said, I want Val to get help. I want Val to get help. I want him to get better, and I hope one day – that he can find his way back to the NHL / the Avs. But I'm worried for him that he needs to move on from hockey and figure everything else out. Plain and simple. And if you're the Avs, like I said, that's two playoff runs now. Two McKinnon / Cale Makar playoff runs that you didn't have two of your top six. Two of top six guys that in a playoff run that obviously for different reasons. But at this point, you have Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland are going to have to make a tough decision. It's going to have to be warranted, and that's the sucky part. I hope, and look, what happened when Val got released by Dallas? He got better. He got mentally better. He was able to come back stronger, and he turned into the force he is. And maybe this is the last wake up he needs. And I hope, and I really, really hope he it is, because like I said, the man is a hell of a hockey player. He is a hell of a hockey player. And like I said, the man I've met was a very, very good person as well. So I wholeheartedly hope nothing for the best for him. I wholeheartedly hope that he gets the help he needs and that he's able to figure all this out, so that way he can get back to playing what God's given him. And it's that size, that strength, that power, that goal scoring ability that very, very few people have. So it's, look, like I said, it's that's a stake in the heart. That's a stake in the heart, because like I said, look, 11 hours ago around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock this morning, there was morning skate. I was part of that. Jonathan Drouin was in a power play one jersey for practice, by the way. So you go thinking 12 hours ago that you're going to have your top six. You're back. You're all the way back. Yeah, you look, the Avs have not led for 1 second this entire series. And you finally get the piece that you think, you know what, Drouin back's going to help us. Drouin back's going to help us. We have Tate still there. Defense is still intact. Everything's going to work. Then less than 8 hours later, it's DEFCON 6. I don't care who the hell you are. I don't care if you're Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Wayne Gretzky, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. If one of your biggest, two of your biggest players get ruled out 30 minutes before a big game, it's over. It's over before it even started. It plain and simple. I knew from the second I saw that the game's over. It's down 3-1. It's hopefully, like I said, I was hoping for a close game. That's what my hope was, plain and simple. I was hoping that the team fought. And all I saw, the only team person that fought on this team was the guy in net, who we fucking publicly shamed in round one.
I made sure that I backtracked hard on that Georgiev take even before tonight's game, but I'm backtracking even harder because were a couple sequences where I thought he was going to get injured because he had to sit in the splits while he's trying to stamp the gloves down on the puck, because none of his defensemen will get anybody out in front of him, and the puck just – you can't Ottinger tonight did not give up a rebound. Georgiev, they were getting outshot 24-3 halfway through the second period.
I've never seen that. I've literally never seen that. Never seen that. And like I said, it was 1-0. Let's not forget. It was 1-0 going into the break. I have not seen that worse of a period since 2016, and the worst, second worst now. Second worst team in NHL history with the Avs. I have not seen that bad. And you were still only down 1-0. That should have been enough momentum to be like, you know what? Our goalie's playing his ass off right now. We need – and specifically, I'm going to look at you, Mika Rantanen. You have been a fucking ghost town, an absolute ghost town this entire playoff run. You've got some ugly tip-ins, and you've had some wide-open net goals, and that's all you've done. You have been a non-factor. When you look on the other side and the production, the number two guy over there, technically number two, he probably is the number one guy over there right now. Wyatt Johnson, what he's doing, he is the best player on this ice. And Mika Rantanen was paid and was brought in and kept around to be the second best player on the ice, if not the best sometimes. And the guy is falling in line and falling to the wayside, looking non-existent.
He's getting outplayed by Tyler Seguin.
He absolutely is. He absolutely.
Let alone Wyatt Johnson. I feel like Wyatt Johnson's outplaying Nathan MacKinnon.
Wyatt Johnson's playing outplaying everybody.
Everybody. He turns 21 in half an hour.
Yeah,
an hour and a half. 21 in an hour and a half is Wyatt Johnson's birthday. Like I wanted to make sure. I don't want to take anything away from what Dallas has been doing because they have a game plan. They've stuck to it. It's not their fault that the Avalanche decided they didn't want to play in the last couple games or just gave lackluster efforts. I'm not going to sit here and say they didn't want to play, but it looks like one team is playing for a Stanley Cup and one team is playing because they show up and they need a game check.
Absolutely. And they are preying on the wounded. They came in full attack mode today. Like DeBoer is such a – like I said, DeBoer is one of the best coaches in the NHL. And like I said, what he does specifically, he tells the guys, when there's blood in the water, you fucking attack. You attack. And that was yesterday's game. And that was today's game, absolutely. Like you could tell, like when the Avs started didn't go their ways. I forgot who was said it might have been the TNT broadcast, but you saw game three even. Mac was slamming Southern Crown. Val was doing the same. Like Kale was getting frustrated.
Miko snapped two twigs in this series. If we can say that,
if you're the opposing team, you're looking at your chops, being like, oh, these kids are done. It is a demoralizing thing. And like I said, the Stars are the deepest team in the playoffs right now. They may be the hottest team right there with Florida. Like, yeah. Legit. They are, like I said, when you have arguably the best goalie right now going playing the playoffs, not arguably, he is the best goalie right now in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you have goal scoring from everybody on the lineup, all the way down to Sam Steele and Rupe Hintz, who obviously left the game early today. When you have production from all across the line, and the Avs looking like, fuck, all right, Caleb Jones, go out there and try to slow down Wyatt Johnson. What do you think's going to happen?
He's going to hold the guy on one play, and he's going to hook him on another. He's going to spend 4 minutes in the box. I think he spent more time in the box. He probably played a lot in the third period. We didn't watch.
Obviously, it's still going on, I think. I haven't got the
score. It's over now. It's 5-1. Over. It's been over for about 10 minutes, but it's not even worth mentioning because this, like we said, this game was over long before. Like, if you want to point to a moment on the ice, I feel like the second period, when they go down, I think they went down 3-0 at the end of the second period.
I'll even go a step further. And what is the most demoralizing play in hockey?
Shorthanded goal.
That ended it because Georgiev, that ended the game there. I don't know what's
more. And Georgiev made a stop. But also, why is he having to make big-ass stops on a shorthanded situation?
I am not going to say if Georgiev made a stop because that game could have been 3-0 before that moment because he made stops that kept us at 0-0 before that moment. But it was Cale Makar in our own zone just losing the puck. And like I said, it was – and MacKinnon and Cale, your best two guys out there just getting outperformed in front of the net. And at that point, MacKinnon slick slammed. It was done. I went to multi-screen on my YouTube TV and started watching the basketball game tonight. Legit. That's legit what happened after that moment. I was
quite a bit on the bench, though.
What?
Who I saw barking quite a bit on the bench at the other guys? Rantanen.
Yeah.
Rantanen was coming back from his shifts and screaming at guys. Like, I'm feeling very similar. I'm not going to compare the two teams. But you remember when Nylander came back for Toronto and Marner was having his little meltdown on the bench. That's what it looked like. We're worried about yelling at each other instead of putting shifts together.
Yeah,
at this point, we're losing guys left and right. We should probably rally. I said it could be a rallying point. You said it could be a rallying point tonight. You lost your guy. Come together and let's fight. Like, you got to fight as a team. You cannot fight amongst your team. You fight amongst your team, you might as well not even show up.
And this is not Bednar's fault at all, but Bednar is an X's and O's guy. He's not a rah-rah guy. Everyone knows that. He is not a rah-rah guy. He is not a guy to fire the guys up in the locker room. That has to come from within. He is a guy that will put the guys out there that he thinks will play the best, and like I said, he's been very, very good at it. He's won a cup for us, plain and simple. But he's not a rah-rah guy. He's a calm, cool, collected guy, and unfortunate part about it, that means you're going to have to look to your guys in the locker room. And I keep going back to this because it's such a massive fucking thing. It's two straight playoffs without him on the ice or in the locker room. Not having your C out there makes a difference. Plain and simple.
When does he get stripped of his C? Because it's three
he's
seasons.
Not going, he's not
it's,
going
if he does not play next season, I don't want that to be dangled in front of the team.
Jimmy, no one else deserves it.
No, I get nobody else deserves it. I get nobody else deserves it.
Cale Makar hasn't showed it to me. Plain and simple, it's not necessarily that you got to give it to someone else to have the letter C on the patch. It's the individual on the
I get it.
It's not the C. It's
we need to find somebody else with that.
There isn't.
There's got to be.
Unless you trade for number 87 in Winnipeg and fucking Pittsburgh, it's not on the ice.
Well, then we need to start developing somebody else into that because I don't have faith. Nobody's come back from the surgery Landeskog has come back from. I'm starting to I had little faith coming into this season, and I have very little faith that this is going to go well. Just like how you said, I think maybe we've seen Gabriel Landeskog play his last game. Somebody else there because Mac can't do it. Miko can't do it. Kale may be
the answer, if I'm being honest with you, because the kid's young enough, and maybe he's able to figure it out. But I'm just going to say this. Like you said, if Landy was done, we would not have seen him skating. I'm just going to go that far. And I know it's fucking practicing or whatever, but to see the guy out there two full calendar years now, since hoisting the Stanley Cup, out there skating and involved in practice and trying to take leadership off the ice, That shows me he's coming back. I don't care at this point. It's another fucking 5 months until the playoffs. Or sorry, not playoffs. The regular season starts again. There is enough time now where I feel like this is a very good spot. But plain and simple, there is not another individual on this team right now that can take that leadership role that everyone's going to fucking listen to. And the unfortunate part is when you brought in Cogliano, Cogliano was great during the championship run, but has not shown that leadership that we hope for. And then you bring in Parise also. The guy is cup chasing. Everybody fucking knows it. Do you think that you would be a fucking voice in the locker room if you knew this is your last legs? Do you think? Like, seriously.
He's not playing well enough to be one.
No, he's not. He's not. Plain simple. But if you knew this is your last legs of your career, last legs easily, and probably last game on whatever Wednesday it is, last game was your career, do you not think you want to fucking chew into the motherfuckers in the locker room and say, I came here for a reason because I trusted you? I'd be doing it, plain and simple. So, and look, that's like I said, that's the difference. It's way too many people talking in the locker room. And I don't – it's not, like I said, it's not the fucking patch of the sea. It's not. It's Gabriel Landeskog. And the fact that everybody looks at him. If Gabriel Landeskog had an A on his fucking chest, it'd make that much of a difference. It was somebody else on C. It's that individual on your lineup, in your team, that can calm people down or fire you the fuck up. And because, like I said, when he stepped in the Avalanche locker room in 2012 or 2013, whenever it was, there's a reason why he was given it right away, because he could do both very, very easily. And McKinnon, as great of a player as he is, he can piss off a lot of people the wrong way. And Kale is way too young for this shit. And when your new guys step in his locker room, Kale, or Mittelstadt, Walker, Parise, whatever, you're looking at McKinnon and you're looking at Kale, be like, lead us. Don't fucking yell at me every fucking second. Unfortunately, we're in a world where you need to fucking coach up and be a good teammate too as well. And like I said, when you have Landeskog on the ice and just fucking suit up, I don't care if he has a C or it doesn't have a C on his chest. It makes a load of difference.
We just refer to him as C. It does not matter that he has that on his sweater. But I, like I said, I don't have faith that he's coming back. I feel like he's best case scenario, he'll come back and he doesn't produce and he's not able to play that he did. But maybe it fires up the team and they are able to get back to some level of what we saw in 2022. Worst case scenario, he goes out there and we realize like this is – there's a reason nobody's come back from this. And God forbid it gets worse. Like now I'm worried about more than just him leading this team. I want him to be okay. I want him to be 100%. And it's not proven that you can be 100% after the surgery that he's gotten. So I think that it's a fair conversation. Who in the organization needs to be held? I know that Val has to be held responsible because it's his decisions. But two seasons in a row, we can't keep our best player from screwing off on the ice, off the ice.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's a leadership problem, and it's not Bednar.
Sakic or McFarland need to figure out some way to get somebody in there because these guys are spiraling out of control.
And that's why I said I think that could be the last time we've ever seen him in an Av sweater. Plain and simple. That's why I think that's a very, very true statement. Plain and simple. And like I said, the guys that you brought in this season with Mittelstadt and Walker, those are guys that you can build upon. At this point, Val is unfortunately not a guy you can build upon anymore. And if you want to take that next step, it's going to take finding another wing. It's going to have to take seeing who wants a gut check and who wants to be a part of a winning culture. Because like I said, there's 14 guys, and the broadcast said this, there's 14 guys out there that have won the Stanley Cup. It's the most left in the playoffs on one team. Most left in the playoffs. Right now, it looks like maybe two guys out there that want it. Maybe two guys. And I go with Georgiev, who did not win a cup here. And I go maybe McKinnon / Kale because of how pissed off they are. Not because of how good they're playing, because of how pissed they are. And that's about it. That's about it. So, like I said, it's going to take changes. It's going to take things. And bright spot about this is season isn't over technically. You have one more game. And like I said, the world is already falling. At this point, just fucking go out there and see what happens. Right? At this point, you got nothing to lose. I look at teams in the past, and the NHL playoffs is better than anything else. NBA teams quit after 3-1. NHL teams can at least get one game, get two, see what happens. See if this team has some guts. See if this team has a gut check. Because like I said, you go to Dallas, and you already stole one game there. You lost two at home. Look what happened to the other team, Denver team, and they lost two at home. right? Like maybe there wasn't enough time after all the news came out to regroup, and now you have 36 hours, whatever it is, 36 hours? No, maybe close to 48 hours until the next game, and maybe that next this time between now and then, there is a conversation in the locker room, and the guys are able to pull it out, plain simple, because like I said, the game was over before it started. The game was way over before it started, and it had nothing to do with the ass. It had everything to do with the Stars just preying on the fucking wounded and taking what they want, and that's exactly what they did.
So then how do we make Wednesday not the last game of the season? Because Wednesday, now your back's up against the wall in elimination. A wounded animal, a cornered animal is the most dangerous. at this point, they've been wounded for quite some time, and we haven't seen much fight since.
Not since the first round ended.
First round ended. And yeah, I know we won game one in overtime, but overtime in the playoffs is luck of the draw. You were not going to be able to reiterate that. You cannot go down multiple goals in the playoffs and expect to continue to go on runs. It's cute, and you can do it in the regular season. You cannot do that in the postseason. And unfortunately, there's been signs brewing that this is a possibility for this team in the postseason all regular year long. They went on stretches where they were great. They went on stretches. I mean, think about their road record in the regular season. The road record ended up where they were under 500 after the first seven games of the season. I know that their record ended up where they were just about 500, but they were 7-0 through the first seven road games. And then by the end of it, they were like 14-14-1. So it has not been great all year. So there's been signs, but how do we make Wednesday not the last game of the season?
I try to play physical, playing simple. Look, Dallas does this better than everybody I've seen in the NHL playoffs thus far. They do not let you breathe for 2 seconds. You are not getting a clean shot on net. You are if you want to come into the offensive zone, you're going to take a body. You are not the stick. Like I said, their sticks are everywhere. They have. I saw a statistic. I think it was either Sagan or it was Ben has 40 blocked shots in the playoffs. 40. That's crazy. That's a stupid crazy number. That means something to them. That means something to them. That doesn't mean anything to us right now. It doesn't mean anything to us.
Have we blocked a shot?
I have no idea, honestly. And I look, if you need to come to this game being like, you know what, we need to protect our goalie, because Georgiev, if he plays again like he did the first half of the game until probably the 10-minute mark in the second period, plays like again that again, you need to score. Plain and simple. You need to score, because if you protect your goalie and your goalie stands your ass for you, I expect McKinnon, Rantanen, and I expect – honestly, I'd probably put Lekki on that first line just to try to get Drouin some points on the second line. And you just get them going and you play them fucking half of that first period. Plain and simple. You play them 10 minutes because you need a start. You need a hot start. I said this with another state. You need a hot start just once. You need a hot start where you see a goal go in and the other team's playing from behind. Because you have not felt that once at all this series. You have not had a lead for more than
barely a second. Felt it at all in the playoffs.
At all in the playoffs. Barely felt it at all. So you need that right away. You need to run the fucking dogs until they can't go anymore. Have Parise just say, you know what, this is your last game of your career. Say what you got. And just throw them out there. And like I said, you have nothing to lose. This like you said, it's everyone, including us, says it's over. You have nothing to lose. Like, I don't give a fuck if it's 7-0. I probably do give a fuck if it's 7-0. But I want this team to go out there and fucking fight.
I just want you to punch.
I want you to fight. I do not think we're going to win this series. It is, like I said, even if you win game five, it is a surmountable comeback that you have to do, especially without, obviously, Val. But I want to see some fight. I want to see some will. I want to see something to build off of the guys that want to be here next year. Plain and simple. Because like I said, I looked at the cap and I looked at everything. The core is there. Rantanen, Lekkonen, McKinnon, Makar, Taze, Georgiev, all there next year. It's Mittelstadt,
it's Drouin,
it's Walker, it's a lot of the Parise won't come back, but it's a lot of these guys that we'll see if you want another contract. Not just the apps, just with somebody else. Plain and simple. And will you lay down? Or will you at least try to go out swinging? Plain and simple. And like I said, hopefully I'd be very surprised if this team is able to get past this round. But I expect this team to fight. And I expect this team to go out swinging.
Yeah, and that's why we are such a great team, because if you go back and check out my five-hole appearance, Nico and I have very similar thoughts. Like, I don't necessarily expect the Avalanche to come back and win this series. I don't expect them to lose it in a gentleman's sweep. I do not want another season where I have to think about the Avalanche losing four straight games to get eliminated from the playoffs. It happened 3 years ago against Vegas. I do not want that to happen again. It would be really nice to get the first goal and play with the lead. You're probably going to end up, if this game series does go seven, you're probably going to end up with at least one more comeback win, but it would be nice to get a win where we lead for a majority of the game. So get that first goal. Let's see where it goes from
there. And if you're able to do that in Dallas, that can give you a little bit of momentum.
You're just looking for something. You need a little momentum.
If you're able to get a two-goal lead going to the third period in game five, the momentum can change just like that. Plain and simple. Momentum can change just like that. So that's what I'm hoping for. And look, I have not seen like I said, Ottinger is a fucking all-world goalie. It took a fucking weird bounce for Casey Middlestad to get a goal tonight, and that was the only one that pucked the back of the net. So it's going to take a Herculean effort to get on top early. But like I said, just come out flying. Just some heart. Because tonight it was a fucking ghost town in that stadium from the half hour before, and it was a ghost town in the locker room. There was no fight at all.
Coach McGinty, what does your team need to get back in this game? Miles and miles of heart. That's all we need. We just need a little bit of heart. Speaking of heart, that was a brutal 31 minutes. So if you're still here, you now get to reap the benefits and reap the rewards, because not only did the Denver Nuggets steal back the series where it's now three games.
I was told we were dead.
Well,
I was told we were dead.
There was a lot of people that were talking about that. There was a lot of people saying that. I mean, we both challenged Jamal Murray after that bad game. Bad game two. You got to do something, because they're keying on Jokic, and you doing something allows for the rest of the team to score. And my God, like that sequence to end the first half last night. Here's how you know how impressive it was, because I was explaining it to middle schoolers who didn't necessarily stay up late enough to watch the game. I said, so Anthony Edwards hits a three-pointer with about 45 seconds left before halftime. Cuts the lead to seven. The Nuggets had a 15-point lead going into halftime. Off of great offensive possessions, you score. Minnesota tries the half-court pass and then the fake lob that everybody – I mean, I say that it's fake because there's no way that I'd be able to make that consistently. I'm sure these NBA players think it all the time. On that long inbound pass, Murray steals it, puts up his own buzzer beater from half-court, and you can take care of the rest, because I feel like that's his pivotal moment in this series. What else did you see?
That's one of the cleanest game winner, or not game winners, but the half court shots I've ever seen. Whether it be sitting right in front of Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller and Jamal Crawford on the call and just staring them down and be like, I know what you were just called. It's like, you just saw that shit go in, and I'm going to stare right at you as you're calling that shit. That's cold blooded. And that's a moment. If, what is it, four weeks from now, Nuggets win another championship, that's the turning point.
That's the opening from the DVD. That's the opening clip.
I would not say the opening clip. I think the Jamal Murray game winner in game two might be the opening clip. That's probably the second clip. Is all I'm going to say. That's the second clip. That's the second. And it's the old adage is like, the Denver Nuggets had a 2-0 deficit. People were calling Minnesota to sweep them and everything. And then Jamal Murray had a half-court shot, and it was all over from there. and then it was all slippings from there. This is a championship team. It's so funny. Everything I saw, Jim, I told you, I was like, I don't listen to ESPN anymore. I listen to only Pat McAfee on the ESPN because of the amount of stupid, idiotic takes people just call out because of the hype show. The hype show is of Anthony Edwards. The hype show. Anthony Edwards dropped 44 points, and guess what? He didn't win that game. They were down by double digits the whole game until the last couple of minutes of the fourth quarter. That's cool. I mean, just don't come to Denver when we make the finals again. That's all I'm going to say. We don't want you here. We don't. Plain and simple. Kendrick Perkins, you can stay your fat ass at home. Stephen A. Smith, go to fucking Cancun with your Knicks after they lose to the Pacers. We don't want you. We don't. But plain and simple, do not. And like I said, you count this team out, that's the worst thing you can do. Can you make this team the underdog? I mean, there isn't a better team to count out. There's a better team. Everyone must have forgotten the championship pedigree this team has. this core five, and people can be like, oh, Aaron Gore's not going to go 10 for 11 again or whatever. Go ask Miami. Go ask the Lakers. Go ask Minnesota last year or the Suns what Aaron Gordon is capable of in the playoffs. Go out and look, even if you want to slow down Aaron Gordon, who the fuck do you think – who has had a terrible series thus far is just waiting and chomping at his shot to fucking cook you? Michael Porter Jr., probably the most offensive weapon, the biggest offensive weapon the Denver Nuggets have. Play simple. Jokic is a weapon, but he's a 7-tool player. When you talk about shooting fucking weapons, there is very, very few people that can do it like Michael Porter Jr. Play simple. And he has not played well. So Anthony Edwards, you want to – Aaron Gordon, if you want to do that, all right, cool, that's fine. Keep disrespecting this to me. You want to clap at the Denver Nuggets when they don't even fucking acknowledge you? Go ahead. Go right ahead. It's cool. It's cool. We know you're the second coming of MJ or whatever the fuck people want to crown you, the third coming, whatever.
He's a mixture of Kobe, MJ, and Jesus.
Look, you can have all the want you will. You have. Plain and simple, there is not a person on earth that can stop the MVP. The defensive player of the year, and I tweeted this out, defensive player of the year looks like a fourth grader on a fucking varsity basketball team. He is getting cooked like fucking barbecue chicken. Jimmy, they are forcing Karl-Anthony Towns to guard him because Rudy Gobert can only play free safety. It is one-on-one Randy Moss in his prime saying, you know what, our corners can't guard you, our safety can't guard you either. So please just stay over the top of him so he doesn't beat us. And guess what? He's still beating you. He's still beating you. He's making Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert look like he's fucking long lost boys of Peter Pan. They're like, oh, where do we go home? I want to go home. I can't go with my daddy.
I don't like playing with the 7-foot Serbian. He's not very nice.
He is the smartest big man in NBA history. I can equivocally say that. It is not even close. The mental smartness, and smartness, is that's a terrible way to say it. Mental education that this man has the game out of basketball. All those he hates basketball takes are fucking out the fucking window. If you think this man does not watch basketball, yeah, he loves horses. Yeah, he loves.
Do they play Saturday? Because the Preakness is this Saturday, and that might be.
Well, game five is tomorrow, Tuesday, and I think game six is Thursday or Friday.
So okay, I was going to say, because last time they played on the day of a horse race, it didn't go well.
It did not go well. So like I said, maybe we need to stay away from that. But this man is just begging other teams to figure him out. And he's saying, all right, you want to do this? I'll do that. I do this, you do that. That is Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson. That is Kobe Bryant. That is prime fucking come at me, and I am going to counter anything you have. Plain and simple. That is domination. It's domination. And like I said, Aaron Gordon going for 10 for 11, he may not hit three threes again. I don't doubt it. I'd be surprised if I didn't see him go 0 for 5 in the field game. But what he will do is, if you want to double Nikola Jokic, where do you think is going to be right around the rim? And if you want to go down double team him, leave Michael Porter Jr. open the corner. See what happens. Go ahead.
Or just continue to let Nikola Jokic pull up in the paint and shoot those floaters over the top of your big ass. Those are all options.
See what happens. You want to pick your poison? Do you want Michael Porter Jr. to drop 30 because he hasn't done that since the Lakers series? Or do you want Aaron Gordon to catch lobs and dunk on Rudy Gobert's head every play? This is the most perfectly constructed starting five in NBA history. I'm saying that. Constructed starting five. There have been great duos. There have been great three-man groups. There is not a five-man group in NBA history that congruently works together as a unit as much as this team, defensively, offensively. Because, like I said, when Anthony Edwards is cooking, they kept him in check by guarding three different people at him. Jamal Murray was guarding him. KCP, AG was throwing at him. Michael Porter Jr. wasn't throwing at him because he's not the best defender in the world. But that's this team basketball. That's his team basketball. And everyone talked about the depth of Minnesota. Nas Reed, sixth man of the year, right? Nikhil Alexander-Walker, one of the best young pieces, young defenders in this league. Who else they got over there? The slow-mo, Kyle Anderson, a guy that is a great defender, not doesn't do much offensively, great defender. they were getting cooked by Justin Holliday. Justin Holliday, Jimmy. I don't know what happened between
– Who's Justin Holliday?
I don't know what happened between the Lakers series and the Minnesota Timberwolves series, but Justin Holliday turned into prime Klay Thompson when the motherfucker just sits there in the corner. And if they want to double-team Jokic, oh, who's number there? Number nine to just drill threes. I'm just going to sit there. I'm going to play defense, and I'm going to sit there in the corner and drill threes and not take a fucking dribble. Playing simple. And that's what he's done. Like I said, he had 12 points on or through the first half, I think, in game five, four, whatever his point total was. And he had three threes, and I was like, this motherfucker can't miss. He don't miss. I was like, this dude was a non-factor. I was begging for him to be taken off the field against the Lakers. Begging. I was like, get him the fuck out of here. Get Peyton Watson on there. Give me a bigger, longer body. That's the multitude of this Denver Nuggets team and what Michael Malone does better than anybody. He adjusts his bench. He adjusts the lineups. He adjusts the rotation every single game, every single matchup. And that's because he has a faith in every single person on his bench. Like I said, he has faith. Justin Holliday is a guy that was bought out. He was a free agent when we picked him up. He was a guy that nobody wanted. He was playing little time on the Wizards. He comes in here and we say, hey, we need you to defend. We need you to sit there and hit open threes. And you can win a championship. And the guy said, sign me up. I'm here. Yep. What do you need?
10 points a game? Does that sound good?
10 points? 10 points a game. And I'll slow down Jaden McDaniels and make Nas read only a non-factor in the second unit. I'll do that. That's what he's doing. And he's been incredible the last two games specifically. And he's been our most consistent player in the whole series. New game one and two even. And like I said, with Minnesota, they're a damn good team. It's just unfathomable that people call this team dead. Unfathomable that people call this team dead is all I'm going to say. There is a massive difference between the Avalanche team we just talked about being dead and this team who was just down 2-0 being dead. Massive difference. And look, you cannot. What's the song? The heart of a champion, or whatever the hell it is. You can never underestimate the heart of a champion. You can never. And like I said, this team has been there, done that. And I get that it's a new bench. It's a new second unit that is running out there, picking up things. But the starting five knows what it takes. And that's scary for everybody, especially Minnesota, when none of those guys, not a single player on that team has made a NBA Finals appearance. Not one has made the NBA Finals. And they are new to this. And like I said, they're going to be good for a very long time. But what did I say after game three? How will they respond losing? And they responded by saying, hey, you know what? Let's make Jokic beat us with scoring and passing. And we're going to not let Jamal pick up the whole court. The adjustments this team made between game two into game three and four, I cannot stress this enough. This is why Michael Malone is one of the best coaches in the NBA, and there isn't a better person for this team. He did a magnificent job saying, we are doing way too fucking much. Set hard picks. They want a guard pick up full court. All right, come take this 300 fucking 15-pound Serbian motherfucker pick from here. You want to get bumped in the post cap? Come beat up Aaron Gordon in the post and see what happens. The big motherfucker that is jacked more than anyone on this team. You want to play tough? See what happens. And I'll let you touch it. I know I go on rants all the fucking time about this team, but I just love this team so much. What happened in game two was the worst performance I've ever seen of the Denver Nuggets. What did I say? I said specifically, this team was not good enough. I didn't blame the refs. The refs are terrible. Refs have been terrible all playoffs. Refs are terrible all playoffs long. I said, you know, they're terrible, but plain and simple, we got embarrassed. We did not play well. This team looked tired, looked just wanted to go out, didn't want to go out there. What happened? They responded. And what is Minnesota doing? Oh, the refs have it out. The refs need a series. And oh, they need the Nuggets. No one wants the Nuggets. Who do you think is going to attract more fucking viewership? Anthony Edwards going on a championship run or the Denver Nuggets? No, it's Anthony Edwards. You can create a fucking storyline with Minnesota. You can't. They have to create new shit to talk about us. So if you want to blame the referees, and I said this going to game four, the team that just puts their head down, like, you know what? All right, calls aren't going our way. Let's just move on. And Jokic obviously complains a lot about a lot of things. He has a conversation probably with as much as anybody with the refs in the basketball, because when he's right, he's right. I'm pretty sure he's 100% from the field when it comes to challenge calls and saying, I don't need a challenge, and he hasn't missed one yet. So, okay, this Minnesota team, if you're going to take that next step, if you're going to do that, you need to stop crying, Karl-Anthony Towns. Karl-Anthony Towns may be the dumbest player I've ever seen in my life. The dude hucks up half court three, down by 13, and I'm like, okay, I mean, you want to do that? Go ahead. You can do that. He fouls Jokic at half because he wants to body him up. Okay, let's put him on the line and knock down for two free throws. He's one of the dumbest players I've ever seen. Plain and simple. He's a good player. He's one of the dumbest players I've ever seen. His basketball IQ is negative 5,000, as opposed to Jokic's fucking infinity.
And then smarter or dumber than J.R. Smith?
Dumber. I'll say dumber because J.R. Smith won a championship and he actually fell in line at some point.
That's still the best.
Just, what are we doing here? That's literally Anthony Edwards every time Gobert and Kat are on the floor. If those ever watched the game, if you saw in that fourth quarter, in those third quarter, fourth quarter, where Karl-Anthony Towns fell on the ground and Gobert went to pick him up and he slid right into him, that's the definition of this team. Plain and simple. Yeah. Like I said, I'm not satisfied. We just fixed everything we fucked up. that's the thing. We fixed everything we fucked up. So now it's a 3-game series, and you fought your ass off to get the 2 seed for a reason. So now you have the at minimum you host game 2 at home tomorrow night, and you lose a game and you win a game, you get to host game 7 again at home. And like I said, job is not done. The series is far from over. And I hope all you talking heads out there realize that this series is still far from over. This series, I would not be surprised if it goes 7. That's how even these teams are. So it's time to respond and see what this team's made of.
By the way, I will point out 2 things. I have a quote that fits because I just put it up in my classroom, and I wanted to throw it out there because I think you'll agree that it does fit with what you were saying about the Nuggets. But my whole, this is the same as the Drake Kendrick rap beef. Just going to say, Drake had the 2 diss tracks first. Kendrick came back with 2 right on his head. Drake responded once. So I'm still saying it's going to go 7 because I think
if we lose game 5, I'm going to be – this is the biggest game of this franchise run. That's the biggest game in Minnesota's career. They were labeling game 3 as the biggest game in Minnesota basketball history. This is the biggest game in Minnesota basketball history, and it could arguably be not the biggest. Obviously, the Nuggets winning a championship was much bigger than this. But it could be another. It could be a stepping stone to be like, yes, this team's going back to back. This game 5 is so damn important. And like I said, after 2 terrible performances at home, it's time to pay your fans back, including myself. I went through bullshit, and I don't want to see it again.
All right. And then the quote for the series: pretend inferiority and encourage his arrogance. You know who said that? Just the author of Art of War, Sun Tzu. That's what the Nuggets – I mean, that's what we kind of did. We let – I love Jordan, but we let Jordan come on our show after the T-Wolves beat us in game 1. And what did he come on here and say? If we win game 2, it's a sweep. And we both kind of – I mean, we both kind of sat there and said, okay.
All right.
I mean, that's what Sun Tzu just said. Pretend inferiority. Make them think that they have you. And then make them build their arrogance because you've popped that arrogance bubble now. That is something that you no longer – this team thought they were invincible, and if they would have handled business at home, they could have continued to think that they're invincible. Now all you've done is introduce this doubt. Wow. Anthony Edwards scored 40 points, and we still got beat by more than 10.
It's a demoralizing thing for a team that's never been there. That's all I'm going to say. It's a demoralizing thing for a team that's never been there. This team has been there. That's the thing. That's the difference between this team and every team that's ever played for the Denver Nuggets. If this was 2 years ago, this team probably would have been done in 4 or 5, playing Super Bowl. But this is the Denver Nuggets team that went through the trials and tribulations of getting through Minnesota last year, getting through Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, getting through LeBron James and Anthony Davis, getting through the almighty Heat culture, and coming out on top. Playing simple. Look, silencing the haters is very, very fun. You doubted this team. Everybody doubted this team. I doubted this team. Now, as much, I still believed that we were not going to go down without a fight because I know the makeup of this team. You said this team was done. That's and there's no backtracking on that. There's zero backtracking on that. Charles Barkley, Stephen A. Smith, Shaquille O'Neal. There is no backtracking on that. You said this team was done. And ever since Jokic got the MVP, ever since we lost game two, Michael Malone, that man has to have had a digital media fucking major. Like a fucking person that works on videos and works on hype videos, because this man probably put every single clip, everyone saying the series is over, of Shaq saying Jokic you don't deserve it, of saying all these things, and said, all right, see what they're saying about us. There's no one outside of the city of Denver and this team that believes in you. Plain and simple, there's no one. So prove all them wrong. Prove all of them wrong, and they are doing that with flying colors. Like I said, series isn't over. We just fixed what we fucked up. And now it's time to capitalize. Because like I said, you win game one. Obviously, you're never going to win game two. The series will be done tomorrow night. Plain simple. But you didn't. You fucked around, and you were able to fix it. Let's see what this team's made of, and see what these two teams want to go to war for.
All right. I agree with you. And I think that's where we're going to leave it for now. We will be back later on this week for another live post-game show after either the Nuggets or the Avalanche. We'll see how the next few games go, and we'll make that decision. Be sure to go back and check out my appearance on the Five Hole Podcast. Nico, you got any final thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
Look, the double parade is still alive. It's not dead, and it's maybe the last time I get to say that. So I'll be very, very careful with what I'm saying. It's not dead. It's bleak. It's grim. The Grim Reaper is staring at it and be like, we're coming for you, motherfucker. And it's because of what's happened in these two series. But like I said, it's not dead yet. And we're, like I said, I love the Avs. I love the Avs. Does it suck? Does today suck? Absolutely it does. But and all the harsh words I have for this team and that organization, it's because I care about them. It's because Jimmy cares about them, because we know how great this team can be. And that's what hurts the most. Is when you know what this team can be, and especially the Nuggets too, when you know what this team can be and it doesn't perform, that's it's leaving ifs. If this happened, if that happened, that's the worst thing in sports. Is when you know your full potential, you've reached the mountaintop, you know what this team, what your team is capable of, and you leave an if, be like, if we had that. If you can negate the ifs and you can say, well, this, well, that, instead of if this, if that. You can go on another championship run. And I'm speaking to both teams. You can go on another championship run. It's no longer facing, well, if we had this. No. Well, we have this. We should do this. That's plain and simple. And that's the attitude for both the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Avalanche. Like I said, it's not over. It's bleak. It sucks on one side. And obviously the Nuggets were in the same exact position 4 days ago. Let's not forget, the Denver Nuggets were in the same exact position, right? Where it was a fucking moratorium nearly on the show two live shows ago. It was a moratorium. We were like, fuck, this is.
Well, the Avalanche won that game, so it wasn't all bad.
It was all bad. But like I said, things can change. Things can change quickly, and this is what makes the playoffs so much fun, because you never know what happens. So I want to see fight. I want to see will. And I want to see two teams in Denver play their asses off. And like I said, if both these teams don't move on this series, I just want to know that this team, that they left it out there, that they left no cushions. You know what? We lost to the better team, plain and simple. And so I want to see that from both teams. And like I said, double parade is still alive. We'll see if we get there, but double parade is still alive.
Negate the if on missing our next episode by subscribing, following us on social medias at FEOTB Pod, and be sure to give the Variety Sports Network a follow and a subscribe on YouTube as well. Thank you guys very much for tuning in live post game of game four of the Avalanche and Nuggets second round series. We'll see how much more we have to talk about. But for now, for myself, Jimmy Pilato, my co-host, Nico Bryant, we'll see you guys later on this week.
Peace.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.